S. personality, his mind and desires and habits, had entered the recipient along with his transplanted heart and lungs and is now obsessing her, melded with her own personal likes and habits. My impression, without knowing more of the circumstances, is that Tim chose to enter Claire during or after the operation and has no idea that his presence may be obstructing or hindering her in any way. Physically, the presence of his heart and lungs has definitely helped her, but she did not bargain for any transplant of his teenaged aggressiveness and impulsiveness. Those attitudes may not be positive ones in a 48-year-old lady. She now has what used to be called a split personality. And Tim himself needs to leave the Earth plane and go on into his new world of astral experience. The entrance of a discarnate entity into a living person during or after an operation is not an uncommon event. The chief difference here is that the discarnate entity was not entirely discarnate, for his physical organs were being implanted into the patient. And so, also, he was not really invading. He was being put into her by the surgeons, as they placed the youth's organs within her body and connected them up to her own circulatory system. Tim did not need to go along with his organs. That was a matter of choice for him, but numerous souls after death of the body do feel that they must follow the body wherever it is. Tim chose to follow his heart and lungs rather than the rest of his body. In cases of organ transplants, the preliminary tests need to be as careful as those demanded by many adoption agencies before a baby is allowed to be given to a couple for their own. An organ transplant in many ways is different from an adoption. It is a melding of intimate cellular memories as well as cellular functions. From reports like Claire's, it is evident that protection of the recipient from becoming the victim of obsession by the donor's personality also needs to be included as a routine preparation just as much as determination of blood type. Such protection might be simply calling their deceased donor and explaining, perhaps repeating on several successive days, "I am speaking to you whose body was ruined in that car wreck. I do not know you, but I am sorry that your body died when you were so young. However, the organs of your body can be given to living people whose own organs are diseased or wounded, and in that way you can continue to help us, but let your mind, your soul, rise higher and enter the light, free and happy. I believe that you are glad to be of such great assistance by donating your organs. And I ask the cells of your organs to adapt to their new bodies smoothly." 326, physiologically, and in every other way. I also ask the bodies of the recipients to accept them easily, as a friendly helpful new units of their bodies. As mentioned, two or three repetitions of this type of instruction may be necessary, and if the results are not as quick and complete as expected, the wording can be changed from, "I ask the cells," to, "I command the cells," in a firm tone. As for asking or commanding the bodies of the recipients, that is an acceptable mode of therapy, for all of us are connected at the lower levels, as also at the higher levels of existence. Four shelves of the bookcase. Like any new field of knowledge or expertise, this entire field of organ transplants needs to be studied carefully in all its aspects, not merely the physical aspects of physical benefit to the recipients. The effects on the recipient's mind, emotions, personal habits need to be considered. I am reminded of Nobel laureate Karl Popper's metaphor of the bookcase of several shelves. On the lowest shelf, labeled physical sciences, are the books containing knowledge of all the physical realms, the fields concerning geology, astronomy, meteorology, anatomy, and so on. Nama here is considered deterministic, reality is physically measurable. These fields are called hard science. On the second shelf, labeled life sciences, are concepts like organism and growth. Here are books about physiology, hormones, enzymes, vitamins, etc., all concerned with the life sciences. These include the functions 327, that define life, respiration, digestion, reproduction, motion, causing the physical body to manifest livingness. Next is the shelf that contains the books dealing with the psychosocial processes and functions of the living body and its brain, consciousness, volition, culture, emotions, ideas, thoughts, habits, feelings, desires, also frustrations, angers, fears, resentments. The cultural aspects of religion and mores also need to be here, and somewhere on this shelf we shall place the books concerned with parapsychological knowledge and knowledge of the psychic and astral talents and phenomena. Willis Harmon, see bibliography, suggests another shelf, which is labeled spiritual sciences, on which are the books concerned with the still higher aspects of consciousness, such as motivation, purpose, planning, choice, courage, and also ethics, morality, altruism, and spirituality, as opposed to mere religiousness and spiritism. Maybe instead of books, the shelves contain plants, each shelf growing the plants of one aspect or one branch of the great tree of life. Then this book is like a plant with its main body on the shelf of psychosocial knowledge, but with roots going down to the knowledges below and its blossoms higher into the spiritual knowledges. In any case, the knowledge that I have conveyed in this book is intended not to be confined to any one shelf but to include several, and especially to extend up into the higher realm where the law of karma is found, with its corollaries of compensation and justice, and where also compassion, mercy, forgiveness, and love are found. These are needed by every living creature and every discarnate living soul. The need is great. Many souls are wandering or hiding, some in bewilderment, some in fear of hell, some in fear of continuing terrors of war, abuse, or betrayal. I urge you who have read this or other books with a similar message to use 328, part of your meditation time to reach out to these souls and rescue or release some of these needy ones. It is not hard, you have only to start and you will be guided, if you ask. A word to the skeptics: does it embarrass you even to consider secretly asking assistance from invisible beings to help you rescue or release other invisible beings? Friends, I know I went through that stage myself. But think of the alternatives to your valuing your own opinions above possible facts. You who could offer help are refusing to do so in deference to your personal opinions. Yes, your opinions are permissible, they are your own, part of your nature. But please be aware that other intelligent people may hold different opinions from yours and that the universe may indeed be too good to be true. On the other hand, the universe at times may seem too hard or too evil to be true, when the law of karma brings down the just reward of former ill deeds or when group karma seizes large numbers of people or other creatures. We do not yet have perfected wisdom or full knowledge of everything in the universe. That may be in the future for the race. Meanwhile, let us do whatever we can to alleviate the hardships of our fellow beings and not be hindered by our personal embarrassment nor by the overwhelming size of the problems. Mahatma Gandhi said, "Whatever you do will never be enough, but it matters enormously that you do it." Mother Teresa said, "In this world we cannot do great things, but we can do small things with great love." So let us begin. The end.